Please turn your Bibles to Mark chapter 10. Mark and chapter 10. This morning we'll be reflecting on verses 32 right through to 40. Mark 10, 32 through to 40. Now they were on the road going up to Jerusalem, and Jesus was going before them. And they were amazed. As they followed, they were afraid. Then he took the 12 aside again and began to tell them the things that would happen to him. "Behold, we are going up to Jerusalem, and the Son of Man will be betrayed to the chief priests and to the scribes, and they will condemn him to death and deliver him to the Gentiles. And they will mock him and scourge him and spit on him and kill him, and the third day he will rise again." Then James and John, the sons of Zebedee, came to him, saying, "Teacher, we want you to do for us whatever we ask." And he said to them, "What do you want me to do for you?" They said to him, "Grant us that we may sit one on your right hand and the other on your left in your glory." But Jesus said to them, "You do not know what you ask. Are you able to drink the cup that I drink and be baptized with the baptism that I am baptized with?" And they said to him, "We are able." So Jesus said to them, "You will indeed drink the cup that I drink, and with the baptism I am baptized with, you will be baptized. But to sit on my right hand and on my left is not mine to give, but it is for those for whom it is prepared." And when they heard it, they began to be greatly displeased with James and John. Well, so far in our reading, last week, in opening up verses 28 through to 31 of this chapter, we saw that Jesus argues that those who value him more than they value their lives and their wealth, that they will receive a hundredfold now and eternal life in the age to come. And he was making the point that if any among his disciples had left anything for his sake, anything in order to follow him and serve him, they would not lose out. They might have felt that they would, but they will not lose out. They will actually gain. They will gain much more than they have left behind. They will gain a hundredfold. A hundredfold in this life at this time, and a hundredfold in the life to come. It might appear that at this moment in time, they are last. They are lagging behind. But in fact, it will turn out that they are first. and will be first. That is the point we last considered together. This morning, I wish to draw your attention to the passage we have just read together. And the passage opens with the observation that Jesus and his disciples were going up to Jerusalem. Have you noted that in verse 32? Now, they were on the road going up to Jerusalem. Going up is generally used to traveling to Jerusalem, because Jerusalem was built on a hill, or even on hills. You needed to ascend Mount Zion, as it were, to get there. It was at a great height, and so you needed to go up. It was at a great height, especially relative to the surrounding regions, especially the region of Jericho, which was in a lower place. So they were going up to Jerusalem. Going up to Jerusalem, in the mind of the apostles, especially as represented by James and John, whom we will be looking at in the moment, going up in their mind was about seeing Jesus take up his place and take up his throne in Jerusalem as Messiah, and seeing themselves taking their place beside him, next to him. You will probably recall Jesus making a promise to them in the Gospel of Matthew that when he comes in his glory, they would sit on 12 thrones and judge the 12 tribes of Israel. As they went up to Jerusalem, that was probably uppermost in their minds, that Jesus was drawing nearer and nearer to the place where he would be enthroned as Messiah. And their moment of influence, and their moment of power, their moment of glory will come along with that. This is what they probably had on their minds as they walked up to Jerusalem. But going up to Jerusalem in the mind of Christ was about going to pay the price for the obtaining of glory. Please listen to that. Uppermost in the mind of Christ as he went up to Jerusalem was the need to pay the price for glory. There will be a glory. There will be an enthronement of the Messiah. There will be authority vested in his hands. All of that will come. But before it comes, he must pay a price. And going up to Jerusalem was about that. The price would be death. He speaks about death in verse 33. He says they will condemn him to death. They will condemn him to to death. And in verse 34, he says, they will kill him. The price would be death. The glory will include the resurrection and all the events that flow from it. And in verse 34, he writes about the fact that he will rise again. He will rise again. Now, it's not the first time Jesus talks about this. Actually, in the course of our studies here in the Gospel of Mark, we have heard him twice say the same thing to the apostles. And this is why in verse 32, it is said he took the 12 aside and we read the word again. He took the 12 aside again. And he began to tell them the things that would happen to him. He was going to Jerusalem to die. Now, what is interesting is that as they were going to Jerusalem, Jesus was walking before them. Verse 32 says that. And Jesus was going before them. He was walking ahead of them. He was determined to go and die. Can you imagine that? Think for a moment. If you were in Jesus' shoes and you knew you must die, your death will happen in Jerusalem, would you take yourself there? He wasn't being driven there. He wasn't being forced to go there. He was taking himself there. He was determined to go there. And he was going ahead of them. Now, this, I believe, is what amazed and astonished them. Because we read in verse 32 that they were amazed. They were astonished. There were others who were following, and we read that they were afraid. The apostles were amazed. Those that followed along were afraid. The people who were afraid had seen the hostility of the Jewish religious leaders. Everyone around Jesus knew that the Jewish leaders hated him. The Jewish leaders wanted to kill him. That if he should land in Jerusalem, that he would certainly die. So as far as they were concerned, he was going into danger. He was throwing himself into danger. It was like walking into a fiery furnace. And they were afraid for him. So as we think about this incident, and especially as we think about the reasons for going to Jerusalem, there are three things I wish to draw your attention to. Notice with me, first of all, the price he was going to pay in Jerusalem. The price he was going to pay for glory, to obtain glory in Jerusalem. What price would it be? What did it look like? Well, he describes it here in verse 33 to the apostles. Behold, we are going up to Jerusalem, and the Son of Man will be betrayed to the chief priests and to the scribes, and they will condemn him to death and deliver him to the Gentiles. They will mock him and scourge him and spit on him and kill him. And the third day, he will rise again. Quite a graphic description of all the terrible things he will experience when he arrives in Jerusalem. First, he will be betrayed by none other than a close friend of his, an apostle, in the name of Judas Iscariot. He will be betrayed. Secondly, he will be condemned to death. So he's going to be put through some kind of trial. And as you read about it in Mark and in other Gospels, you will find that it was an unjust trial, rushed. The adjudicators would take little time to look at the case and satisfy themselves that evidence has been supplied and that on the ground of that, he could be convicted and sentenced to die. But that notwithstanding, he knew he will go through it. He will be condemned to death and delivered to the Gentiles. The Gentiles will carry out that sentence. And the Gentiles will come in the form of the Romans. And the Romans had a cruel way of meting out justice. And the justice will be a crucifixion. We'll learn all about that as we go along. He will be mocked, scourged, spat upon before he is killed. Well, eventually, he will be killed. He'll be hung on that cross. He will hang there for hours on end. He will suffer hunger, and he will suffer thirst. And his hunger will not be removed by food. He will be kept in that condition. His thirst will not be taken away by drinking water. His experience on that cross will therefore be excruciating. He will eventually die. But he will rise again on the third day. He says in verse 34, on the third day, he will rise again. He would come into his kingdom, and he who would share in his kingdom and in his glory must be ready to drink the cup of suffering, must be ready to die with him, as it were. He for whom it is prepared will sit next to him. But he who really desires to sit on those thrones that he promised must be prepared to go to Jerusalem, in a manner of speaking, and die with him. Well, that is the price he was going to pay. The glory he could see. It was clear. He would know it. He would experience it. He will enjoy it forever. But before he sees it, before he enjoys it, he must die. That death will be experienced in Jerusalem. And this is why he was going to Jerusalem, to pay the price. But let's notice in the second place the glory he was going to obtain through the payment of that price in Jerusalem. Now, we are not told much about it in this text. We read much more about it elsewhere in the Bible. But all we are told here in this text, in verse 34 in particular, is that he will rise again. He will rise again. He will die, and there will be evidence of the fact that he is dead, but he will rise again. That's another way of saying he will come back to life. And there is a lot we can see, and we must see there when he comes back to life. First of all, by his resurrection, by his coming back to life, he would signal the fact that sin and death have been defeated. There are others who came back to life at the time Jesus died, but they died again. When he comes back to life, he will not die again. So the glory of his resurrection lies in the fact that he will never die again. He will only live and live forever. He will have defeated death forever. He will have defeated sin forever. Secondly, because of his resurrection, he would ascend to heaven. Now, if he wasn't alive, he wouldn't ascend to heaven. He is alive, and so he will ascend to heaven, and he will sit at the right hand of God. In other words, he will be exalted, he will be given a high name that is above every other name, according to Philippians and chapter 2. And every knee, including those who will kill him, every knee, including those who were persecuting him, every knee, including those who did not esteem him, who didn't think much of him, every knee will bow, and every knee will confess that Jesus is Lord. So let's put it this way. Jerusalem may not own him as Lord when he arrives there. His people will recognize him as such, and they will receive him well, as we will see. But much of Jerusalem will be clamoring for his blood. They will shout, "Crucify him, crucify him." And they will clap when he is crucified. They will kill him. They will rejoice over his death along with the devil. But he will grow. He will go through Jerusalem. He will rise and ascend above Jerusalem. He will sit on the throne of God. He will be given a high name, and every knee will bow, and every tongue will confess that he is Lord. The glory is there, but it will not be attained without the price. He is going to Jerusalem to obtain the price. Thirdly, by his resurrection, the means of justification, our justification, would be secured. We cannot be justified by a dead Christ. We cannot be justified by a defeated Savior. His justification was the evidence that he had conquered sin, he had conquered death. And on that basis, and on that basis alone, God would put to the account of those who believe in him that righteousness of Christ. Defeat would mean there is no basis of justification. Resurrection means the work of God has been done. Sin has been defeated. Death has been defeated. And all those for whom Jesus did this work must receive their salvation, their justification. By his resurrection, therefore, the means of our justification will have been secured. Let's note in the third place, which is the point of what Jesus is teaching here, the call to his disciples to pay a similar price as his in order to obtain the glory. The call to his disciples to pay a similar price as his in order to obtain the glory. Now, this point is represented in Jesus' conversation with James and John. Let's read about that conversation once again. In verse 35, then James and John, the sons of Zebedee, came to him saying, "Teacher, we want you to do for us whatever we ask." And he said to them, "What do you want me to do for you?" They said to him, "Grant us that we may sit one on your right hand and the other on your left in your glory." But Jesus said to them, "You do not know what you ask. Are you able to drink the cup that I drink and be baptized with the baptism that I am baptized with?" And they said to him, "We are able." So Jesus said to them, "You will indeed drink the cup that I drink, and with the baptism I am baptized with, you will be baptized. But to sit on my right hand and on my left is not mine to give, but it is for those for whom it is prepared." Just a number of points I'd like us to observe. First, notice that James and John appear to be oblivious to what Jesus was teaching and to all the pronouncements of Christ. Now, Jesus had just been saying, "We are going up to Jerusalem, and I'll be betrayed and condemned and mocked and scourged and spat upon and killed. Now you would expect James and John and all the other disciples to stand back and say, what? Who is going to do that? Why will they do it? What have you done? That's not going to happen. We will protect you. We will shield you. We will surround you. But that's not what happened. No sooner had Jesus made this sad declaration than James and John make the request, teacher, we want you to do for us whatever we ask. It's almost as if they are saying, we don't care about what you are saying. We didn't hear what you said. But listen, we want you to do for us whatever we ask. They are still thinking about the glory they think Jesus will obtain when he goes to Jerusalem. They are still thinking about their greatness alongside that of Christ. And it wasn't just James and John who were thinking this. You know how earlier on, Peter and the other apostles were thinking in the same way. In fact, Peter rebuked Jesus for talking about suffering. How can you talk about suffering? You are the Messiah. You are the King. How can a king suffer? A king becoming a servant? No, don't talk like that. And Jesus explains that he needed to go through suffering. And one would have thought that by now they would have learned that lesson. But no, they don't. They didn't. James and John are still asking Jesus to do for them whatever they ask. And what is it that they were asking? Verse 37, grant us that we may sit one on your right hand and the other on your left in your glory. Oh, we don't know about the others and what they want and where they want to sit, but we really don't care. What we want you to do for us is for you to make sure that one of us sits on your right, the other one on your left. That will be enough for us. They were sitting, they were concerned about their greatness. In other words, James and John were looking for preeminence, were looking for proximity, and they were looking for power. We're looking for preeminence, to sit in the glory. We're looking for proximity. They must be next to Jesus. And they were looking for power, to be on thrones, exercising that power with Jesus. Someone has said they wanted a crown without a cross. They wanted glory without suffering. They wanted honor without humility. They were not thinking in terms of ministry, even though that is what Jesus had called them to be doing. They were not thinking about fruitfulness. They were only thinking about having power, and not so much in glory as Jesus would have conceptualize, but in Jerusalem. In Jerusalem. Which brings us to this final point. Jesus counsels them to pursue glory through the cup and through the baptism. To pursue glory through the cup and through the baptism. Listen to this in verse 38. Jesus said to them, "You do not know what you ask. Are you able to drink the cup that I drink and be baptized with the baptism that I am baptized with?" And they said to him, "We are able." I'm not sure they really understood what they were saying. But Jesus said to them, "You will indeed drink the cup that I drink, and with the baptism I am baptized with, you will be baptized." So he uses two metaphors to speak about the price. The price he must pay to gain glory. The price, therefore, they must pay to gain the glory they so much crave. Two metaphors. First, the metaphor of the cup. You remember in your reading of the Bible, Jesus is now in the Garden of Gethsemane. And what was his prayer in the Garden of Gethsemane? "Father, let this cup pass away from me. Nevertheless, not my will, but yours be thine, be done. Let this cup pass away from me." What was that cup? It was the cup of suffering. He presents suffering in the figure of a drink, drinking suffering, going through suffering. He's describing the whole spectrum of events surrounding his suffering, surrounding the cross, the rejection, the torture, the mocking, the flogging, the spitting, the nails, the tearing of the flesh, the dislocation of his bones, the draining of his blood, the laboring for breath, whatever he will suffer, that's like a drinking of it. Symbolized by the cup. They must drink this cup. If they would see glory. So he's basically asking them, "Are you ready to drink the cup? Not just your cup, but to drink the cup that I drink. Are you ready to suffer for my sake? Are you ready to suffer in my name?" What about the baptism? Well, basically, it's saying the same thing. Just changes the figure. Baptism means being immersed or being submerged. It's an image of an event that Jesus must pass through and be engulfed in. The cross will seek him out at every level of his being. And the horror and loneliness of the cross will overwhelm him, as it were. Now, whereas baptism would seem to suggest that he will be plunged by cruel men into that suffering, he'll be overwhelmed by it. He'll be covered in it. He will be at the hands of cruel men. Drinking the cup suggests an act of his own will, doesn't it? He is taking himself and leading himself to experiencing that suffering. And under the figure of baptism, cruel men will take him and subject him to that suffering. He's asking them, are you ready to go through this baptism? But he doesn't just say that. He also says, they will go through that baptism. And they will drink that cup. And they will gain the glory. Just that it's not the glory they have in mind. This is the price of glory. It's a high price. And brethren, the apostles were expected to carry their cross, to follow Jesus in order to share in his glory. If you are his disciple today, the standard is no different. The price is no different. You may not be crucified as the Apostle Peter was. You may not be subjected to all kinds of indignities as many of the apostles were. You may not be burnt at the stake. But you are called to carry the cross. You are called to suffer in some way for the sake of the gospel, for the sake of the kingdom. You are called to be prepared to be inconvenienced, sometimes even to die for the sake of the kingdom, for the sake of the glory. And Jesus asks, are you able to do that? Are you willing to do that? Are you doing that? Some of us want Christianity to accommodate itself to us. So in other words, we won't do what is uncomfortable. We won't do what will subject us to any suffering. We won't go out of our comfort zone. You know, Christianity must fit in with us, or else we'll have nothing to do with it. Jesus must fit in with us, or else we won't serve him. And that is why some of you can't do the nasty things. Some of you won't pull your weight to serve. Some of you will not go out of your comfort zone, because the kingdom is not fitting in with you. Jesus is not fitting into your parameters. And that can't be the price of glory. That's not what it looks like. So let me conclude. Ultimately, Jesus here is still teaching that he who would be first must be last. That privileged position of being truly great in the eyes of God is left for who? for those who are like little children, for those who are willing to serve, for those who are prepared to go through any suffering, any inconvenience, if that is what it takes to serve Christ, to follow Christ, to do his bidding, that place is prepared for such. And this is the point at which Jesus ends. It's not the end of the conversation, but for purposes of this sermon, in verse 40, to sit on my right hand and on my left is not mine to give. I can't tell you, James and John, whether you will sit on my right or on my left. I can't tell you that. But I can tell you this much. That place is for those for whom it is prepared. There is a preparation. And those for whom it is prepared will take it. And those for whom it is prepared are those who are willing to drink the cup and to be baptized with the baptism he himself is baptized with. You will have your place in heaven, no doubt. But are you prepared? Have you been prepared for that place? That preparation includes taking up your cross and following Jesus. If you are truly his disciple, you will be prepared to go to Jerusalem to die so you can rise with Christ and rule with Christ forever. Amen.